Dalet Kislev, Wednesday, the 26th of November, Harav Agon Rabbi Yaakov Hillel, Chanukah.
Hanukkah, we have a good start in the sedras we're reading last week and this week. Last week we heard about the pregnancy of Rivka, Itrosasu HaBanim BeKirba. She had, of course, as we know, eventually she knew that she had twins, and they were, Hazal tell us, what was all the fighting going on in that arena? And they tell us, Lohamim al Nahalat Shne Olamim. They were fighting about who's going to inherit this world and who's going to inherit the world to come. Shne Olamim. This world and the world to come. That means it's quite obvious that it's either this world or the world to come. So that's what the battle was about. The Gilua Ne'arim started going up. It became very obvious that they had when they were in their pregnancy. Hazal say that whenever Rivka passed by idol worshipping temple, Esau was fighting to get out. And when she passed by the yeshiva of Shem Be'ever, Yaakov was trying to get out. But then they grew up, and immediately you see the difference. Esau was the Ish Sadeh. Ish Sadeh, Yodea Tzayid, a hunter. The Targum says, Gvar Nachshar Chan. Gvar Nachshar Chan means an idle person, a bored person. Bored person, they're always looking for action. What's happening? What's going on? Something to do. Something exciting. But Yaakov, Ish Dam Yoshevo Halim, he was a perfect person, perfect in his Torah, perfect in his keeping of mitzvot, and perfect in his character traits. Titen Emet Le'akov. He symbolizes Torah, he symbolizes Emet. Yoshev Ohalim, sitting and learning. So it seems very obvious that they have very clear tendencies. Esau is a man of this world, and Yaakov is a man of the world to come. For him, this world is only a prosdor, is only a passageway leading to the world to come. Then Yaakov negotiates with Esav and buys his birthright. Of course, again, this is referring to the Bechor having special responsibilities in Torah and Mitzvot, which Esav didn't particularly want. He said very clearly his hashkafa, "Mahanofi holet lamut." What do I need all this for? All these spiritual concepts of the world to come to serve Hashem here and be rewarded there. Nochal v'nishte ba'olam hazeh kimachal lamut. We'd rather eat and drink and enjoy life in this world, because anyway we're going to die eventually. He doesn't, obviously, he doesn't believe in the world to come, so there's nothing almost to fight about. It's not a fight. I think that the whole this whole setup with the lentil soup was really a trick. Yabu Yaakov b'chokmetav, in his wisdom, he wanted to be sure that he's doing the right thing by buying the birthright. Maybe he's taking it away from Esav, not in a fair way. But he saw Esav linked to the red. Even he said so. Ha'adom ha'at'eh. Hagmi'en ina min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. throw into my throat this red. He wants the red. Obviously, red symbolizes blood, symbolizes warfare, symbolizes what he was eventually blessed with, Al-Har Bechatihi. You will live on your soul. By Yaakov, also in last week's parasha, we had one word mentioned twice. Hakol Kol Yaakov. Hakol Kol. As Hazal say, as long as the voice of Yaakov is heard in synagogues, in yeshivas, Ena Yadayim Yedei Esav, the hands of Esav cannot harm him. So we see that they're obviously going this way. So when Yaakov had this proof, he went ahead, negotiated, bought the birthright, and then went ahead, and his mother made sure he got the brachot, which was a specific bracha of Zvulun. That was the whole idea, because Yitzhak still had hope that we can keep Esav in the fold. Let him be the Zvulun. Yaakov will be the Ishtam Yeshevo Alim, the yeshiva boy, and Esav will be the supporter. But Rivka knew that's nonsense, that if the money is given to Esav, forget about it, the Yaakov will be starved to death. She wanted that the Zvulun will come from Yaakov, like it was eventually. He had two children, Issachar and Zvulun, and that's how it happened. So he got this bracha of Zvulun. I mean, a father can bless 10 children and 20 children, there's no problem. But, you know, and Esav saying, Habracha had, Hilecha, can't you give me one bracha? He says, no. And we're speaking about the bracha of being Zvulun. Yeah, and it's gone. It's given to Yaakov. Even so, yeah, Yitzhak made the bracha conditional. V'hayaki tarim, uparakto olu me'alecha. If Yaakov would rebel and not keep Torah mitzvot, hasa shalom, then you can throw off his yoke and God forbid. It's an etzara hi le'Yaakov. It could be a difficult time for the Jewish people. So we see that the whole battle between for this world and the world to come started with Yaakov and Esav. And this continued throughout all the generations. Hazal tell us that on Purim there's a mitzvah of Mishteh v'simha. And on Hanukkah there isn't a mitzvah of Mishteh. The mitzvot hadlakat nerot, to light the candle, the menorah, al pitei batim, to shine outside, to shine into the street, and lehalel ulhodot, to say halel and to thank Hashem in modim, al anisim, al aniflaot. That's the mitzvah in Hanukkah. The Levush, one of the great poskim, explains that since Haman wanted to destroy the Jewish people physically, להשמיד, להרוג ולאבד, מנער ועד זקן, טף אנשים ביום אחד. Mercilessly. The Hitler solution. Kill everybody. Wipe them out, God forbid. So, name של ישראל. So, it was a physical Yeshua that we had. Hashem saved us physically from death in this world. So, we have to commemorate that. Also, the Seuda, the spiritual part, we commemorate with the lights. And the physical part, in Purim. So on Purim there's a mitzvah of Seuda, but so because we were saved physically. But on Hanukkah, the Levu says, since the Greeks had a different agenda, they didn't want to kill us at all. They just wanted us to assimilate and accept their way of life. And they have a lot to offer, so they claim. I mean, they have Greek philosophy, which even Gedolei Yisrael were very impressed with. You know, the Rambam based a lot of his writings on Aristoteles. And it's true that the Migdal Oz writes, not that he felt that this was the true way. He says, I've seen, when I was in Spain, I saw very ancient manuscripts written by the Rambam, where we see that that his writings are, and his thoughts and his understandings are exactly like the Ramban, who was a great Kabbalist. So he didn't really need for himself this approach of philosophy. But Migdal Oz explains that since that generation was seeped into Greek philosophy and they already accepted Aristotle in philosophy as the truth, as truth. To go against that, the Rambam felt it's a waste of time. So he said, you know what, you want philosophy, I can show you the Torah's philosophy. We can go through the whole Torah and explain everything philosophically and everyone can be happy. Keep mitzvot and learn Torah. Of course, the latter-day rabbis, specifically the Vilna Gaon, he spoke very, very strongly against the Rambam in this his idea that, if they want philosophy, we'll give it to them with Torah. We should never compromise in our religion. We have nothing to be ashamed of. We have everything that can be explained in the deepest of ways, the most profound and truthful ways. We don't need any gimmicks from outside. So, anyhow, the Levush writes that since Hanukkah was a spiritual Yeshua for the Jews, it was Hashem saved us from assimilation, which is really much worse, because if Haman kills the Jews, God forbid, you go straight up to Olam Haba, Kiddushin. People who die al Kiddush Hashem, they go straight up, they're Kiddushin, they're holy. But those who assimilate and take, drawn into alien culture, so there it's a different story altogether. Their soul is destroyed. Once their soul is destroyed and being contaminated, so they lose the world to come as well, which is a much greater loss. So the Levush writes that in a way Hanukkah was a much more a serious test for the Jewish people to overcome the temptations of assimilating into Greek philosophy and Greek culture and Greek, the whole concept of the beauty of the human body and sports and the whole way of indulging in worldly pleasure, which is so far away from the attitude of Torah, is when we know we're meant to be more and more spiritual. Harotze lehiot yamit et atzmo, Hazal say. You want to really live? Kill yourself. Because if we kill our physicality, we have more potential to attain spirituality. These are two forces which contend with one another, the physical and the spiritual. As Hazal learned in the Pasuk, Mare'ah hareva, I will fill with the destroyed. They said, Lo nitmal'at tzor ela mahorbana shel Yerushalayim. Tzor, which was a Roman battalion at that time, was built on the destruction of Jerusalem. They literally took all the buildings which were destroyed, all the holy places, they took all those stones and built their own town of Tzor on the very destruction, using what was destroyed from Yerushalayim. And the other way around as well, that Jerusalem will be built on the destruction of Tzor. They don't exist together. They are not complementary to one another. They are against one another. Spirituality and physicality and materialism, they are directly opposed. And this is what Hanukkah is about. We see that we have the mitzvah Hadlakat Nerot, as we said, to light the candles, oil lamps, the windows, the doors facing the street, Lefasem et HaNes, to make public, to announce the miracle that Hashem did for us publicly. And this mitzvah of Halel Mehoda'ah, to say Al HaNisim. It seems very strange. The Gemara, Sefer Shabbos, asks, my Hanukkah, what's Hanukkah? By the way, we don't see them asking what's Pesach, what's Shavuot, what's Purim, even what's Purim, because all these have parts of the Torah or the Nevi'im who tell us what it is. Even Purim we know about from the Tanakh. We have Megillat Esther, which our rabbis agreed to include in the Tanakh. Esther requested, Kidvuli Lidorot, I want to be part of the Jewish Bible, and they agreed. But Hanukkah has no source in the Jewish Bible. So they have to ask, what's Hanukkah? We don't know. If Hakamim won't tell us, we'll never know what Hanukkah is. So they ask, what's Hanukkah? And they tell us very clearly, Hanukkah, the Greeks wanted to uproot religion, etc. Kohen Gadol and his five sons went out to fight miraculously. They were successful. They came into the Beit HaMikdash. They purified the Beit HaMikdash. And there was no oil except for one day. There wasn't until they would be pure to make new oil. They needed a whole week. So there wouldn't be oil for 8 days. And trusting Hashem, they lit the menorah the first day, and it carried on remaining alight till they were able to become pure and make new oil. So to commemorate that miracle of the Ner Hanukkah, the miracle of the lamp which lit for 8 days when it only had oil for one day, that's what Hanukkah is about. Okay, fair enough. But then we look at the other Nisim, we don't see any mention of that. We see a completely different story. Hazal tell us that what's Hanukkah? They're telling us clearly. We thank Hashem for the great miracle He did for us on the battlefield, that the mighty and the many and the cruel and the evil were overcome by the righteous and the few and the holy people who have nothing to do with battles and nothing to do with fighting. They're not trained soldiers. They just went, B'Shem Hashem, in the name of God. And they were victorious against the mighty armies of Greece, which at that time had conquered the whole world and were ruling over the whole world. And here you had a group of rabbis fighting them and overcoming them. And then after the Al HaNisim prayer tells us all of this. At the end says, V'ahar kah ba'u b'necha lebir b'techa, u'finu et echalecha, v'tiharu et mikdashecha, v'hidliku nerot v'hatzot kodshecha. That's all. He went into the temple, purified it, and looked, and lit the candles, lit the nerot. Doesn't say anything about oil for one day, lighting for 8 days. That miracle is, we don't thank Hashem for, in Al HaNisim. So what does this mean? So, of course, in some nuschaot of Al HaNisim, we see a difference from Purim. Some don't have this difference. For example, in the Sephardi customs, they do. And on Purim, we say, can I have a sunnah? The end. What do we say? Al Mishrecha? How does it end? No, right at the end, the last three words. Says, here we are. In Purim it says, in the plural, in the singular, because there was only one miracle, the physical miracle. But on Hanukkah, it says in the plural. It says, "Can I have a small dish of this?"
This is nusach.
I know. Let's hope it happens. If not, anyhow, that's how it is. Vesita imahem, in Purim we say, Vesita imahem nes vafele, in Purim. And in Hanukkah it says, Vesita imahem nisim v'niflaot, in the plural. Why? Because on Purim there's only one miracle, the physical miracle. Haman wanted to kill us, and Hashem killed him and his sons and all the Amalekim. And on Hanukkah we have two miracles. In the plural, because we had the miracle on the battlefield, and we had the miracle that the light of the Torah overpowered the light of Greek philosophy and Greek culture, the spiritual battle. Now, of course, it could very easily have been forgotten over the generations. You know that things get warped and get changed, and we could have forgotten the fact that this battle with the Ivanuim was really about spirituality. That's what it was about, that's all. They wanted to uproot our spirituality and change it with a more material and more physical attitude to life, based on their culture and their sports. And that's why the victory had to be, even on the battlefield, through Kohanim Gedolim, Sifte Kohen Yishmiru Da'at. For us always, the Kohanim represent Torah. Torah Tevakesh Mipihu. Learn from the Kohanim who guard their tongue and study and teach Torah. So they represent Torah and spirituality. They fought the battle and won, and the miracle was done also with the Nerot, with the lighting, Menorah. The question is, why did we need that miracle? It was redundant. Hazal said, Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. If the whole community are impure, they can keep the mitzvot in the temple as well without being pure, since everyone is impure. So they didn't need this pure, you know, they found one jug of oil still with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, which proves they didn't touch it. They didn't contaminate it. So, and they only used that, and the miracle happened. It says Hashem never makes a miracle for no rhyme or reason. So what was the reason that Hashem made this miracle, which is, seems to be redundant? You know, light with impure oil, what's the big deal? The answer is to remind us through our generation what this battle was about. It was about the light of the Torah against the darkness of Greek philosophy and Greek culture. That's what we have to remember. So when we think of, you know, our situation today, people think, okay, this is a historical festival. We're commemorating something which happened little more than 2,000 years ago. And we thank Hashem that he saved us physically and spiritually. Thank you, Hashem, for that. But it's not true. We face the same nisyonot, the same trials and difficulties on a daily basis in a much, much more powerful way. To illustrate this, I'll just say, Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the first temple and took the Jews into the first exile to Babylonia, saw in a dream a huge, gigantic statue. The head was gold, the shoulders and the arms were silver, the chest and the stomach was copper, the thighs and the legs were steel, and the feet were steel with haspa, which is clay. And our rabbis explain what this means. These are the four galiot that we're going to go through. First, the head of gold was Babel. The arms and the shoulders of silver was Paras u'Madai. The chest and stomach of copper was Yavan, the Greeks. The thighs and the calves of steel was Rome. Long galut, unfortunately. And finally, the feet are still steel, but with copper, with clay mixed in. That we should say this refers to Ishmael, because toward the end of Galut Edom, we find reference to Galut Ishmael. And then he looks in his dream and he sees how the statue topples over. First the golden head explodes and crumbles away. Then the shoulders and arms of silver crumble away. Then the chest and the stomach of copper crumble away, explode and crumble away. And finally, well, all the way down, the legs of steel have gone, and all we have is the ankles and the feet. This is called Ikbeta Dimshiha. Our rabbis refer to the time before the coming of Mashiach, a time of Ikbeta Dimshiha, the ankles of the Mashiach. That's when we're down to the ankles of this, the force of evil, which is the statue represented by. How did it explode? In every generation, the Shekhinah and Klal Yisrael, wherever we go in exile, the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence is with us. So we go through the golden head of Babel. What did we have? Haharash, the Hamasger, the biggest Hachamim, learning Torah, teaching Torah in Babylon. They were exiled with the yeshivot, with the rabbis. They were learning Torah, the head exploded. At the time of Parasu Madai, which is the silver arms and shoulders, we had Mordechai teaching Torah. As we know, he was a Rosh Hashiva, sitting Beshara Melech, he was a Rosh Kolel, a Posek, a Dayan. His Torah destroyed the Parasu Madai, which was the silver part. And then the Yevanim came along, they conquered us, we went in exile. The time of the Second Temple, we had Yohanan Kohen Gadol Ubanav. They fought the Yevanim, and the Shechina with them, the copper chest and stomach exploded. And then Rome, it's a long galut. We had the Geonim, the Rishonim, the Achronim, the Poskim, from generation to generation, and the legs are going. Now, before Mashiach, Ikbetedim Shiha, we're right at the bottom, at the ankles of this statue, and it's a difficult flight. A difficult fight, Chutzpayas Ge. This is what living is about. But then Daniel saw, Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream, as it's written in the book of Daniel, all of a sudden the whole statue is built up again. The whole statue, all the way up to the golden head. And then a little boy comes along with a stone, flings it at the statue, and it explodes in one shot. So what does this mean? What does this mean? The meaning is like this. In our generation, we think we're not at war with Greek philosophy, with Greek culture. Of course we are. But not only with Greek. We're at war with all, with the idol worship of Babylonia and the Persians. With the Greek philosophy and their culture. With Roman immorality. With Muslim cruelty. We have it all. That signifies the whole statue being built up again, completely. How do we have it all? We have it. You have today the internet, you have all these, you know, forms of mass media, which publicize everything even in the world. It's all available. We're attacked with all the forces of this statue of evil in one shot. But the Mashiach comes, he's the little boy with a little stone like David HaMelech that Saul had, a little catapult, and he shot it at the lion and killed him. So also, he destroys this the idol which represents the forces of evil. This is our Nisayon today. We're fighting the Greeks, we're fighting the Babylonians and the Persians and the Romans and all their cultures and all their evil ways, which threaten us spiritually. We want to destroy us as the spiritual nation. Hanukkah, the message is, we are the spiritual nation. We were created by Hashem. He created the world for Am Yisrael and the Torah to teach us to be a spiritual nation, to be linked to spirituality through Torah, through mitzvot. Everything we do in Torah and mitzvot is a special link to Hashem. Ba'atem advekim ba'Hashem Elokechem ha'im kolechem hayom. For us, the Olam Hazeh is only a passing way through. We use Gashmias for the sake of Ruchnias, not Gashmias as an entity on its own, as an end in its own. It's only there for us to grow on Gashmias to get to Ruchnias. So if we get clear the message of Hanukkah and bring up our children and our families with this concept of Klal Yisrael being Am Ruhani, a spiritual nation who are meant to cleave to Hashem, we got the message right. Thank you.